round.
It's the Shindig 2020 Finals. CATR's 16-band Blood Sport Elimination Challenge is coming to a...
I suppose we felt in some respects that we actually had to, because that, you know, is what people wanted.
Maybe we needed a new pair of shoes.
Yeah. So there was an element of that involved in it. And yeah, it was, you know, interesting to get back to putting down our ideas in that form. Whereas before, you know, or during that period, we've been doing a lot of kind of art installations and music for the BBC and remixes.
So you've been staying busy.
Oh yeah, we've been doing an awful lot of stuff, but we had to concentrate on the album. Like, we started really, in all seriousness, probably about 4 years ago, actually writing lots and lots of material.
It seems different than your previous album. It's almost like a culmination of, you know, what was popular and what was underground. You seem to have somehow got the mix right.
Culmination, I think.
Yeah.
Cultimation's a good word.
Cultimation, I like that better. I think it's definitely a cultimation.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it just felt the time was right to do an album, having gathered in enough influences and honed our skills, and then it just needed to be a move on from the last record.
Yeah.
And having done quite a lot of kind of welcome to our mad laboratory of funky sound, and here's all this stuff can do with abstract sounds and fat beats, and it seemed right to actually cycle round and to the realization that voices and songs and words are actually often what give music its depth. And it's a great challenge to do that. A good song. It's just like with visuals as well, you know, the excitement of making abstract visuals was great for a while, but then after a time you ask yourself, well, what actually story can I tell? And you realize that's what makes, you know, visual wallpaper different to film, is a script, a plot, a spine, a song. So I think those sort of frameworks are necessary probably for art of different types, and music is the song. We've always used the vocals.
Criticize and accuse.
just a reflection. And the law of karma says you reap just what you sow. So unless you lived a life of total perfection, you better be careful of every stone that you should throw. And can we spend the day throwing stones at one another? 'Cause I don't think or wear my hair the same way you do. Well, I may be common people, but I'm still your brother. And when you strike out trying to hurt me, it's a hurting you. Walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. Oh yeah. And before you abuse, criticize, and accuse, walk a mile in my shoes.
You know, when I met you guys, well, first in 86 and then coming back in 89, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of creativity going on in that London at that time. I mean, you introduced me to Patrick Forge and Norman Jay, and, Patrick New Giles and whatever have you, and now all these people are pretty successful. So what do you think, you know, about that time reflecting back? Because, you know, it's what was so creative or special about what was going on?
I just, there was, you know, that synchronicity plus competition, really. There was a lot of people that were feeling it, as we say in London, and, you know, there was a healthy competitive drive to get, you know, your club the best, your record collection the best. I suppose record collectors, it stems from record collecting and record collectors, and record collectors have a very competitive vibe most of the time.
Because after all, I mean, you guys, I mean, you were a digger. From way back, for lack of a better expression.
I mean, we're in a record shop now. Your shop, we met in a record shop. Music heads hang out, you know, and so you're quite likely to connect with other people on the same wavelength, which is how John and I actually met. But I think people you mentioned, we were just at Coachella, actually, and came over on the plane with Giles, who we haven't seen very often, but we go back a long time with him, and Norman as well. John used to play at parties. In fact, when I came back from living in Spain, this rare groove scene had really taken off, and I went to a party called Hole in the Wall, and there was Norman, Jonathan, Judge Jules, who's also
good friend of Norman's.
A dude on the scene, and I was like, what's this record? And Jules said, oh, I shouldn't really tell you, but I suppose I can. It's called Cross the Tracks, Maceo and the Max. It's like, I've got to get this record. It's like all the James Brown records that I really love, but I haven't got it. Where can I get it?
Yeah.
And eventually John sold me a bootleg of it, which was our first sort of transaction.
Well, no, it was a white label.
We're going to do a song that you never heard before.
I mean, those were sort of those underground times, you know, where like funk records were being bootlegged and this kind of thing. But it was interesting, Matt, because, yeah, I mean, I met you guys. John, you were working at Reckless, and Matt, you just came in one day, and we all just kind of hit it off. And then I went over to your place, it blew me away. Well, one thing, the way you were mixing, because it was very hip-hop in style, and you were cutting up and in a very hip-hop kind of influenced style.
Yeah.
But you played me that four-track mix, Say Kids, What Time Is It? You know, your first collage mix you guys made. And it really blew me away. And maybe you could just talk for a minute about what influenced that. I mean, I know like Grandmaster Flash and Double D and Steinsky.
Well, those are the two main characters that inspired that. I've also sort of realised recently that John Peel's influence on our generation and other generations of English music lovers to be into a lot of different sorts of music, and actually it was okay. You didn't have to just say, I'm in the punk tribe and I hate everything else. It's like, well, I like these punk records and I like these reggae records and I like these Afro records.
Yeah.
I like Kraftwerk as well. And then that coupled with what hip-hop and people like Grandmaster Flash and Double D and Steinsky, who are the sort of more white intellectual end of things, if you like, you know, more of a similar background to John and me.
Yes.
But also, hey, we like to get down, we like these records, they've got a feeling of freedom and soul about them. And then Steinsky and Double D brought as well that humour and that choice of, you know, off-the-wall sample stuff from films.
Very diverse.
Very diverse. And it was like, hey, you know, this actually is a blank canvas where one could do all kinds of stuff with a funk backing to it, but make a lot of other points at the same time. So I guess that was what inspired us. But at the same time, talking about, you know, Norman and Giles and so on, there was a scene in London which was the warehouse scene, and John was a major dude on that with Meltdown and Flim Flam.
Yes.
And I was sort of more on the periphery, but I used to play some great parties as well, like Bazooka Joe's. And that was where we used to, you know, a lot of the time, the standard clubs, your West End snobbish, expensive clubs, were so racist and narrow-minded that we couldn't get a gig there. So we started doing our own parties in wherever space.
Underground parties.
And just, like, you know,
get a lamppost, wire up
in
the generator.
That was a classic, that hole in the wall.
You were a soul boy. You know, you came from that kind of...
Kind of, but I was a bit of a left-field soul boy.
Yeah, because I went to your gig in Common that time. And it was a very soul boy, red groove.
Yeah.
You know.
That's true, but also the soul boy thing was kind of... There was a lot of sort of wearing the right kind of shirt and stuff there.
Yeah.
And we weren't really into that. We were like, hey.
I was a punk soul boy.
A punk soul boy, but then looking at your collection back then, world music too.
Yeah.
You know? So there was that other, and that's what makes it so interesting, you guys' collaborations, because you came from Oxford. You were
a university. I had a science background.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Do you like scratching?
Are we on the air, sugar?
The Music Maker.
How interesting.
Top recording artist.
How delightful.
The main squeeze of the airwaves is about to explode.
Okay, Dave, my man. Here I am making up one funky, funky tape for you, and I know you're going to enjoy it. This is the only bit of talking on the tape. It's action all the way. Hope you enjoy the tape. Here we go.
Once upon a time, long time ago, before rock and roll... You see...
Three.
You see...
Two.
You see...
One.
You see...
Now we come to the payoff.
Round.
know. Are you really ready for some super dynamite soul? Introducing the world's greatest entertainer, Mr. Dynamite, the amazing Mr. Please Please himself, the hardest working man in show business. Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show, James!
Brown, 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 brown,
brown. Get up, get on up, get up, get on up. Stay on the scene,
get on up,
like a sex machine,
get on up.
Wait a minute.
If you know the words.
Station WFUNK, better known as We Funk, or deeper still, the Mothership Connection.
Master Matt Black. Ow! 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 everybody. Now, now I'm the guy. Now, now I'm. Now I'm. Now I'm the guy named Curtis Blow.
Hey kids, what time is it?
Time.
Say kids, what time is it?
Time.
Say kids.
Time.
Say kids.
Time.
Say kids, what time is it?
What does it all mean?
What evil lurks in the hearts of men?
What he does. You know, he DJs and he comes from the jazz background and sort of expanded that somewhat. He plays a great diverse range of music. Yeah. To say the software side of things, as we've been doing. And you know, that's great for him, but we've taken a more sort of winding and wider path.
I remember back then, you know, you're talking about you know, we were both really into Rare Groove and whatever have you, and you were like, Dave, this house thing's got to be taken seriously or whatever, you know, like, this is coming, you know, it's not going to go away.
I remember hearing I was living in Spain when those first records came out, and you know, the Spanish guys who weren't particularly interested in my sort of funk and soul and hip-hop, I put like Love Can't Turn Around on Friday Jack Master Funk, and they all sort of swarmed around the deck saying, hey Matt, what's this, and I knew it was going to be massive. Since it's quite a cool time to be into house now, I think, because it's kind of reached the bottom of its
it's going underground again to some degree,
and so then it can ferment and some good other stuff can come up.
But I mean, yeah, that influence of house and acid house was quite fascinating, that you know, with the house influence, when you collaborated, you had big hits. I mean, this was before Ninja Tune got started, and it was kind of, I mean, you had the international hit, the Art B remix, and you know, infamously you only got paid few thousand dollars for it, whatever have you. Lisa Stansfield, Yaz, and whatever. You guys went incredibly overground, top of the pops, and in the charts.
Yeah.
And then came Ninja Tune. So how did that all kind of develop and change for you guys?
It's kind of larging it up, rock star, you know, hey, look at us thing.
Yeah.
In a way, the DJing thing initially, as we started, was a reaction against that. And
But it soon became the way of day, with the DJ replacing the rock star.
Your open, complimentary style seemed to suit the changing times.
Yeah, it was fine for a while, but then, you know, fairly soon the diversification became monoculture again, which is, you know, the way of the world with business. There's a pressure there, the Model T Ford principle of production line and that whole aesthetic. And
it's
we started
cycle,
to get polished,
yeah,
you know, by the record company. They wanted us to repeat. People hold on to success, the only way is up success.
Yes.
They didn't want us to move on. Matt and I were interested in moving on, in controlling our own videos and controlling more of our output.
Yeah.
And this was
so you
a
were
problem.
Unhappy?
Yeah, I mean, we were frustrated because we were presenting ideas and presenting music to the record company, which had been independent, but had been purchased by a major label. And so it was now a major label concern, purchased by Polydor, and then we were bought from Polydor by Arista. So in a way, we just became stocks and shares, or a commodity.
Exactly.
And
you
didn't
suit us.
We
didn't like it.
No.
Yeah.
And, there was the stuff we were messing about with, early software to do visuals. And
yes.
They didn't get
doing animations and so on.
I remember
saying,
you were doing that.
You know, I can do this on my Atari. I can do a video for this piece rather than paying someone 10 grand to do it. It'd be more true for us to do it ourselves.
Creatively.
Electronic music, sample music, electronic visuals, sample visuals.
Mm.
They didn't get it. And that sort of put us in check a bit. So it's time to become independent. And Ninja Tune was the, as we formed the thing, our Technicolor escape pod that we blasted off into.
I'd much rather be constrained by economies than aesthetic.
So it was a reaction to your success, then? Really.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, are you motivated by fame or success? And how Did the success affect or change you? That I you can write a book on.
I think it would be disingenuous to say that we're not interested in getting known and getting appreciation for what we do, and getting paid for it as well. We're still, you know, because we haven't mansioned out and made millions, perhaps that's why we're still doing it and we're still hungry.
Yeah.
You know, I think you see a lot of people, they do some great work, they get a few million for it, and you never really hear too much interesting from them again. That hasn't been our fate, and you know, it's just as well. When people come up and say, I think what you're doing is great, don't give up, we really appreciate it, and you've inspired me to start making music myself, and now I'm doing my own films. That does feel good. To be like in Hello Magazine and Big Big Property in that way, and become a celebrity for the sake of being a celebrity is not of much interest to John.
So I think clearly what you're saying to me then is that it's important to, for it to be of interest. I mean, like, you love computers, you love making visuals, you're now making films. I mean, profound changes have happened with Cold Cup, but sort of the foundations were laid early. Like, I mean, even your collage mix, and don't you think today there's aspects still in the music you make, you know, like that was the...
Oh, yeah, I think the collage is still there. The cut and paste ethic is still there. It's a lot more refined because we have learned how to do things a bit better. We've still got a way to go. So there's that element. Plus, you know, it's 2006. It's not 1988. And in 1988, just going, get down, everybody went, sounded good. Because nobody had seen or heard.
We need soul back in the mix.
Yes,
you know, never goes away. Something
you know. Well, you know, I'm a soul boy.
Exactly.
It's not so easy now. In that respect, you've got to be more creative. You know, get more content, I suppose. So that's something that has added to our development, and I think is exposed in the album. You can see that there.
My tragedy almost is that I don't get time to write. I'm glad if I can find 2 or 3 hours a day for my work. But I feel I can do enough in 2 or 3 hours, and I don't believe in draining the reservoir. Do you see? I believe in getting up from the typewriter, away from it, while I still have things to say. It's better than to completely exhaust.
Yes.
One never knows. I find I'm inspired by all manner of things. Nature is very wonderful, powerful, yes. But with people too sometimes. The only thing is with people is that it exhausts me. What I find is a very simple thing that I always think, if one leads a normal life, a happy life, what is normal?
What is normal? Yeah.
But I mean by that, nothing too exciting. You eat your 3 meals, you go and walk, or you play ping pong, or whatever your hobby is. You lead a natural existence. You don't rely on any outside things to stimulate you. Just from nice, easy living, it wells up in you. And if you do this... If you do this every day, go to your desk, as I generally do right after breakfast. I do all the writing I can in the morning, you see. I'm finished by noon, usually. Everything takes care of itself. It becomes a habit, don't you see? You've cultivated a certain habit, a way of life. And I'm always talking about the way of it. This is my criticism of America fundamentally, and of all human individuals too. Find the way of life and you have the secret. You have the secret to happiness and joy, serenity and creativeness. Do you see? If you can find your rhythm, don't you know?
You're listening to David Love Jones on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. The show is called African Rhythms.
We couldn't do all the stuff that we do unless we had a good team. It's all very well coming up with these ideas and then, you know, actually finishing them off. As they say, invention is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. Even the album, Samir's album, has been very much a team effort with input.
I just did it, and I'm ready to do it again.
We already knew, John and I, that it's not a good idea to be going, people, this is bad, you've got to do what Colcutt said, because we don't drive cars, we use paper. Yeah, we do. We're all in the same boat, and our karma is just this, you know, multicoloured. having been through that advert experience, I don't really care too much what they say on the forums. This is our lives, our decisions, our learning experience. But my sister has this Buddhist phrase, which is, contentment is a radical act. I do think there's a lot in that. Mm. And it's advertising is one of the main engines pushing discontent and greed,
yes.
Which, and it's that kind of gluttony on all fronts that is killing the planet. And I think, you know, of course, Greenpeace advertise, you know, Ninja Tune advertise, so again, it's right across the board.
Yeah.
I believe in engagement, you know. Mm. I think sticking in your head in the sand piously and saying that, you know, you prefer one devil over another isn't activism. Engagement and trying to come to terms with the fact that this is the situation now and doing something about it. I, for the first time in my life, I've donated a sum of money to a cause that I could not have done without timber. Mm. So hopefully that's going to have some use. It's a far more complex issue than a lot of people say armchair philosophists, armchair activists actually understand or realise. Even we don't realise how complicated it is, and even people who work within the industry and within the business trying to change stuff don't realise how complicated it is.
Does it scare you sometimes, though, just that you might say something too political that will become unfavourable?
No, not that. We don't worry about like what other people think, you know what I mean? The powers that be are going to come down, and they're going to tap our phones.
It's going to be pretty dull.
But I was going to say, it's about the examined life.
Yeah.
That's what we're interested in. I think if we can deduce anything out of what we've just been saying, it's that it's good to think about what you're doing and what your actions are. Mm-hmm. Sometimes other people's reactions can be important feedback. Sometimes you've got to ching your own internal tuning fork, having gone through an experience, and see if it felt right or not. And just to examine it. Don't hate the media, become the media. And I think nowadays media is information, and if you control people's information, you control their minds.
Mm.
So I'd encourage my kids, for instance, to understand that information and media can be
edited.
It can be, you know, produced, synthesized, edited, warped, processed, filtered. A lot of what ought to be information is actually propaganda, so information filtered through some sort of agenda.
Mm.
And that, you know, when you see that that sound that goes with that visual, don't necessarily buy that as verbatim, because maybe that was put on afterwards. And when you start using tools like VJAM to be able to take a frozen sample of some audio and some visual, a moment of reality, purportedly as recorded, and then slow it down and look at it frame by frame and grain by grain,
mm.
find out that actually what you're seeing and what you're hearing is not necessarily
the truth.
So how do you get your visuals or your videos? How do you get them to people? Because that's the important thing. I mean, if people can't see it, then it's not.
We have the live show.
By touring. Putting it out and on the website.
On the web. We've been doing piratetv.net for years, so that's a guerrilla TV station. We're not so involved with it now, but the idea of forming that was so that we could show that it was a channel.
Yeah.
Like a radio channel, but a TV channel, where you can do what you're interested in, your message, and get that out without censorship of the authorities.
Hmm, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, getting back to sampling and digging, I mean, with MP3s and people downloading, even just the kinds of things sampling, I mean, the whole game has changed so much, you know, since we met each other almost 20 years ago. You know, it's complete. We're both still in the game, thank God. But, you know, what incredible change. I mean, you, John, and that both of you were always good at keeping me up to date on changes like, you know, electronic moves, Dave, you know, this is what's coming out, or new age music, or this or that, you know. I mean, it's been a wonderful kind of journey. And now, you know, with Serato, you know, how you don't even need records to be a turntablist anymore or whatever. So
you still need ears. Though.
Yeah.
Although we were at a radio station today where the DJ just talked, and the producer had chosen all the records, and they were there in the playlist, and it just automatically goes from one to the next.
Yeah, boring.
So, you know, well, that's maybe that DJ gets to be more of a presenter and talk and concentrate on that. But for us, the process of digging through with the fear, you know, what's going to happen next, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And getting it on and queuing it up and feeling the dust and the physical interface.
That still has an interest for both of you.
It does, yeah. Even when we're working with laptops and other sorts of interfaces, it's important to have some kind of physical relationship with the music rather than...
Oh, sir?
Yeah, no. So I still, you know, cannot resist.
yeah, John seems the bigger digger, you know, of the two now.
Especially when we've got someone like you who's actually...
knows what's going on.
...refined the... if you take a look around, we'll be here for a little while to play... How long would it take to listen to all the records in the shop?
Well, the rest of our lives might be enough time.
This is just one shot. Even then, you could easily miss something. You know?
Yeah.
That's quite freaky with that, the whole download thing, that, you know, when you look at the MP3s and it says... time to listen, and it can actually tell you. The fact that you don't have to carry heavy shit around is good. The fact that you can take something quite rare and beautiful like this, no doubt, and digitise it, and then not damage it and have it as an item. Or you can just buy this and pass it on to somebody else. You know.
On the other hand, next time you're stuck at the airport, try sitting on your laptop box.
Yeah.
Or the laptop advantage. Could crash and you've got nothing to play, unless you have a backup file or whatever.
I always carry a box of sevens.
Analog backup in case of emergencies, break glass, remove vinyl, 7-inch.
Once upon a time... long time ago...
Come on, sing along if you know the words.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's home from work we go. Hi-ho, 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 it's home from work we go.
Why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on this. Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cut away coat, perfect fits. Putting on this. Dressed up like $1 million trooper. Trying mighty hard to look like super duper. Miss Cooper, Comets mix with Rockefeller. Walk with sticks for under. Their mitts, putting on this.
I think that's is sort of is one of my drives, is just to sort of be in pole position on the novelty innovation side. The problem with novelty is it doesn't age very well, isn't it? So you have to keep on the hop. And it's not just that things, when they first come out, that they cost more, it's that they don't work properly. So you end up with blood coming out of your eyes at 7 a.m. trying to get the recalcitrant piece of tech to actually do what you want, which it stubbornly refuses. So it's a kind of geek's problem-solving hit, a bit like playing video games. You know, it's like, right now, let's make it and listen to some records earlier. Even though I don't really buy vinyl, I'll make an exception by a couple of the tunes you've looked at.
There's just too many here to tempt you.
Well, I said that like there was an Afro record I went to explicitly list it, but you know, there's a whole career just in sampling this one record.
Yeah. So many
little sounds and riffs
beauty
on it.
Vinyl.
You know, part of the what they call the Akashic Records, which is the collected experience of the whole universe.
But the visual thing has got you more interested now, and it's more about collecting visuals. And John, you're still the digger you always were.
Yeah, still, for me, it's the sound. I'm into visuals, and I'm, you know,
John pulls out visual stuff, and I pull out sound as well. But in fact, it can divvy up quite well like that. But the sound often comes first. We often get asked what comes first, and you know, they say, well, you know, let there be light. But actually, in the beginning. Was the word someone had to say, let there be light,
deep.
To actually sounds came first, you know.
Yeah,
and often more time with our work, the sound does come first, and that can be some grain, whether it's a breakbeat or just some sort of granule of sound, a seed, which we can then grow a musical structure on top,
and you match it up with sometimes
match
a vocalist or a singer or whatever.
Yeah, and with visuals as well.
So if you had to paraphrase, if that's the correct word, and if somebody knew nothing about Cold Code, how would you guys describe yourself up to all this time?
Sick.
No, we're music lovers.
Yeah,
we found that we could play with sound, and we didn't know anything about making music, but we reckon we could do that shit as well as anyone else.
Yeah.
And we're still here 20 years later, having got away with it.
I would say just two kids with their toys is basically the best way.
Don't grow up, kids. That's my advice. So.
Yeah, we
focus back.
Yeah, well, we are folk music, I think. It was funny, when we came in through immigration, they asked what kind of band are you, and I said we're electronic folk music.
Yeah.
And the guy was not quite sure, looked a bit quizzical, but just let it go. In a way, that's what we are. Like Matt said when we were in Germany, folk or volk, isn't it? People music.
After all, we're all kind of folk music to some degree, I suppose. But yeah, like you're saying, I mean, the song structure is kind of the spirit is one of the things that comes from that. And along with electronic music, it's a beautiful kind of combination.
Yeah. We're not ready to quite let the machines take over completely.
Yeah.
But we're not Luddites either.
No. We want the humans need to stay in the mix and, you know, evolving to get the best out of machines. Machines are at the most interesting, I think, at the moment when they're interfaces between humans. Machines don't have the repertoire of emotional response or intelligence that humans have. So, you know, playing
not
games
yet.
On your a big question. See Roger Penrose and The Emperor's New Mind, etc., etc. Personally, I do believe we will develop artificial intelligence.
Do you think there'll be a how?
Yeah. The question is then, if you can build an artificial intelligence that's more intelligent than human, that can then build another intelligence more intelligent than itself.
I wonder if it'll be greedy too.
No.
Depends what we're like if we build it.
Yeah. If we can put that into it. All right, well, thanks a lot, Matt.
Thank you for having us. Great to see you, man.
It's good to be in the shop. Got to call the others and get them down here, because they're going to be sick if they don't get down here.
Only after we've had the best.
Yeah, no. It's not like that, though, is it? I'm not like that when it comes to digging.
I thought you said you were up early before all the other young ninjas and you get down.
Well,
the
that's the thing. That's the thing. That's the way to do it. You get up early. And
he wants to be the king digger.
Ninja powers, but you know.
I think looking around, there's enough funky sounds for everyone here. So respect.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have you here.
This is a journey into sound.
And that's it. That's the Cold Cut special.
This is a journey into sound.
In our sets.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume.
Bump that bass.
And in our eclectic Cold Cut sets, interspersed with the interview, we heard a couple of unreleased mixes Matt made back in 87, Once Upon a Time and Heavy One. We also heard a track from their new album, and hopefully you were lucky enough to see them.
Fundrive 2020, CITR's annual fundraiser extravaganza, is almost upon us. This year's theme is Crush on CITR. And since we deal primarily in sound around here, we started wondering, what does a crush sound like?
This was okay, I think. Oh my god. Is that? Yeah.